It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, important announcement. We have a change in the leaderboards.
Oh boy.
Yes. Not of this podcast. No, we have not gone up or down in Cameroon or anything like that. No, of our listeners. I have a new favorite listener. I'm extremely fickle. That's why we have leaderboards, because it changes a lot. But at the moment, my favorite listener is Craig. Because
he sent you money.
No. But that is a real good way to shoot up in the leaderboard. And a real way to shoot down in the leaderboard is to send me a request for money on Facebook, certain people. No, he bought my book for free, actually started reading it, and tweeted to me that he was about a third of the way through, and he thought it was good. He was enjoying it.
Oh, nice.
And had some theories about where it was going. A third of the way through, I'm like, what could those theories be? I'm really curious. and now it means it's also international.
Oh, yeah.
It's an international bestseller for free this month. So I don't know. I whined about people getting my book on this podcast. I also whined about people getting my book on Twitter, on my author thing, and I whined about it on Facebook. And it's free this month because of a sale that I opted to be a part of. I don't know, but it's going now. One day I got three purchases in the day. And I've had a couple where I've had two in a day.
That's good.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing it. And so I'm pretty excited about that. And I don't know if they're people I know, except for Craig. But I am excited. People are reading it. I just have to remember not to yell Papa Dom's or bread. Hello, everyone. Welcome. The Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world with moisture-wicking technology to keep you fresh and dry while you listen. I'm not going to say moisture-wicking is a scam. It is. I know firsthand it is not. What I will say is that strikes me as one of those things. There's probably no laws about claiming that, right?
I don't know. Probably not.
That strikes me as one of those that you could just say, oh yeah, our fabric has it, whatever. So that's not great. Anyway, I'm Tony
and I'm William, and this is episode 591. Countdown is on.
91. Oh crap, I gotta hurry up. I got calls to make, orders to place, threats to deliver. I got to learn several new skills. If you're joining us for the first time, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Whatever they want. The hat forwards us the emails. We read them, talk about them on the air. It's a podcast. And we do it once a week. How's your week been?
First week of classes. It's always kind of
I do want to say, I took a 30-minute nap before starting this in the idea that it would perk me up. It seems to have had the opposite effect. I apologize. Go ahead.
I have that effect on people. It's always kind of uncomfortable because you're meeting professors for the first time. Some students, by now I doubt I'm meeting anyone for the first time, but maybe the last time I was in a class with them was like months ago. So it's a little awkward when you first get started, but I don't know.
And there's a lot of uncertainty. The probability wave is fairly broad.
Right. But I wanted to ask you a question. Instead of going on and on about my week, I wanted to ask a question. I have a question for you, but not for the hat. And you know what? I realized, I was thinking about this. And I was like, you know, I need to make sure that the listeners know that I'm asking them this question too. But that's always the case. Every time I ask you a question, I'm also asking the listeners a question. But like, I don't always say that. So I wonder.
It should be clear. I mean, it really should be clear. If this is not, if you are a regular listener and this is not clear, even if you're a new listener, I'm like, we're doing this on the internet. None of what is happening here have we deemed to be private. We have private things we talk about. We don't put them on the internet.
Yeah.
So everything we are talking about here, we would love to hear your take on it, whether it be on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, or no, that's pretty much just it. Just there. Go there. The magic. Or if something spurs you to send an email that you want us to read from the hat, we can do that as well. But I mean, go to the blog, talk to us there. Yeah, all of this stuff, especially the things in the hat. I'm like, I really want to know your take on it. Because otherwise we wouldn't put it on the internet. Because you can't put something on the internet and not have people comment. It's impossible.
What happens to us all the time?
No, they're commenting, but they're not posting about it. Okay. Believe me, people are commenting with the eye rolling and the why am I listening to this and what is happening?
Right.
All right. Go ahead. Apologies.
All right. So sometime in the early 2000s, I first time that people read books differently. There's like, there were like two main ways that people read books. One is they're reciting the words in their head while they're reading and they're kind of whatever, which is the way I do it. And then there are the people that are like, a film sort of plays in their head. The book sort of makes this kind of thing in their head and they're not thinking of the words or sounding the words out or anything like that. It's just sort of, the words just sort of make images appear in their head and they sort of enjoy those images, almost like a film is playing in their head, even though they're reading. I'm not describing it very well because I don't experience this, but do you know what I'm talking about?
No, actually.
Oh,
I didn't know that was a thing.
How do you,
I do know is it for you? There are a lot of people, I very much say the words in my head, which is why my silent reading speed and my out loud reading speed are very similar. I know a lot of people don't sound out the words in their head. I didn't know this idea. I mean, also it's confusing to me because I sort of do both. Like I'm sounding out the words in my head, but I also have a picture going.
Right. I mean, I make the image the way I understood, the way someone explained it to me who does it this way and who didn't realize there were other people who sounded things out in their head. They didn't know that was a thing people did. It just sort of, the words aren't sounded out in their head. Whatever the words are doing is more unconscious, and the images are the thing that's really the, you know, they know the words are in there being processed, but they're not really hearing them or experiencing them or sensing them. They're mostly just that visual thing that you do and that I do. That's it for them. The words aren't like zipping through there. So
the words, when I start, the words aren't words, they are just meaning,
I guess, or they're it's, it would be like I don't know, it would be like a computer that is experiencing application that's running on its screen, but it's not experiencing the code that's making the application run, kind of thing. if that makes any sense. But anyhow, so I started wondering if people watch movies differently because, well, I was watching.
I always sound out the words when I'm watching.
No. The way it would work with visual media in theoretically, the way I watch movies, TV, whatever, I am very much taking it in as something that the director is presenting to me. And maybe that's the way I read too. This is something that the author is presenting to me. And that's why I'm sounding the words out in my head and stuff, because I'm attending not just to the, whatever the author's images, the author's trying to create, but I'm also interested in what the author is doing to create those images. I'm interested in, you know, what they did to make that happen. So I'm watching and this is a director showing me this thing. And so I think I'm seeing through the director's eyes or the director's lens or whatever. But I wonder if other people are able to sort of take ownership of what they're seeing and like imagine themselves as this sort of floating, you know, invisible and, you know, being that's kind of floating through the scenes and experiencing or whatever. And they're not really thinking, they don't have a sense that a story is being told to them, but they have a sense that they're in the story and moving, they're moving, not so much the camera is moving and stuff like that. I wonder if anyone watches movies and TV like that. I mean, you don't, I'm gathering by your reaction, but I wonder.
Well, no, I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, how do I watch movies? Because neither of the things you've just described sound resonate.
Interesting. Good. That's interesting.
But then I'm like, so what is mine? I don't know. I mean, because especially with books, on the one hand, I do enjoy the language. And that's part, I am very focused on the words because I like how it's constructed and things like that. But I will absolutely disappear into the story. And
that
like
doesn't happen to me, really.
Not even remember I'm sort of reading a book at times. And I think I read them for different things. I've talked about this before. I sort of have two categories. There's sort of three categories really, but for a book, for skills as an author, there is wordsmithing and there is storytelling. There's also sort of world building, I think, is a separate thing, because I have had ones where I'm like, I don't like this. Actually, for world building, as opposed to like what I think of as poor storytelling but good world building, Star Wars and Harry Potter, the original sort of sagas of both of those, I do not like those stories. I think in the process they created a world I found very interesting. But with books, you get a lot of wordsmithing, and I have read books where I'm like, this story is dumb, but I love the way they tell it. And I've had other ones where I'm like, this person has a fourth grade reading ability, but they have crafted such a cool story.
Well, I think the world building aspect that you're bringing up,
you get both.
Yeah, I think the world building thing, that's probably one of the strongest draws for me to long form fiction. I mean, I've always liked jokes and ghost stories and short form little fictions like that. But I think one of the things that makes me appreciate long form fiction is, I might not get into the plot or the characters or the weird fictional stuff that doesn't interest me, but the world building is fascinating to me. And I think that's something that I didn't know fiction had when I was growing up. And had I realized that there was fiction with real strong world building, I might have thought, oh, that might be interesting. I might have actually read more fiction when I was younger because of that.
World building is something that pulls me in really hard in movies and TV and in video games, actually. Mm-hmm. Very much the lore and the story of the video game. The lore and the setting of the video game, not necessarily the story. Books. I'm really more, and this is true of any of them. If one of those things is good enough, I will probably be into your story in whatever media. But with books, it really can vary. And it depends on how good you are at it. One thing can compensate for the others pretty well for me. And I just appreciate them on different levels that way. I don't know that it changes a lot how I experience. I think poor ability in some of those areas pulls me out of a story. So if you're writing, if your wordsmithing is poor, I'm going to be fine. If your story is really good, except every once in a while, I'm going to be like, what? That was a dumb way to say that. Or I didn't even understand that sentence, or that doesn't sound right to me. Like, and then I'll be taken out for a minute.
So do you think if you're looking at a story that has good wordsmithing, you're more likely to have the words going through your head, but a story that's not as good at wordsmithing, maybe you'll tone down the words going through your head and accentuate the visuals in your head, you think?
I mean, certainly not in any consciously observable way.
Right.
I think good wordsmithing and poor storytelling is rare these days in the stuff read.
Sure.
And I think part of that is the lower barrier to entry to authorship, because I think wordsmithing is a what I consider good wordsmithing is a rarer and more difficult skill. Whereas lots of people can come up with an interesting story to me. I just remember back in the day, the Wheel of Time series, Robert Jordan. That was the first time that I was like, especially in the early books, I was like, I don't really give a shit about what's happening, but I love the words. And I would read like several chapters and I'll be like, this is dumb, but I really enjoyed reading those chapters. I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to cope with the fact that oftentimes when I'm picturing stuff that's happening in a book, I'm picturing it animated. And I don't know why. But this goes back a long time.
Wow.
They're usually cartoons. They're often sort of realistic cartoons, but cartoons. I don't know why. I think some of it is, especially when a person gets really good at description of a character, my brain tries to accentuate the features that are being used. And the easy way to do that is if it's animated, like, because some of the things I imagine like on a real person would be horrifying, but on a cartoon it kind of works. I don't know.
Well, you know, Isaac Asimov was my first big introduction to fiction of any kind, particularly speculative fiction, particularly science fiction, which it still would be my favorite kind of fiction. And he definitely is a person whose strength is in, you know, the story and the world building and not so much in the words. I mean, he's not a bad writer, but he's no Hemingway or anything like that. I mean, there are a lot of people I've talked to who don't like him, or, you know, who don't like reading him. And when I ask why, it has nothing to do with what he's writing about or whatever, or his world building or anything like that. It's just not an interesting.
He doesn't craft particularly evocative sentences
or lyrical.
They're very expository. And this is a thing. So when I read Odd Wings, it's in first person. And I have read a lot of books that way. That is comparatively a new sort of common thing in novels. It's less of a thing back in the day. And some of the people I had editing it who have studied a lot of literature and stuff were kind of like, you know, this is, if you're going to go this way, that's fine. It's sort of not normal. And I've realized I read a lot of stuff like that and I really like it. And part of me really feels like they're telling me a story in a very literal sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're just hanging out and they're telling me what happened with admittedly impeccable detail. And in fact, I get frustrated when it inevitably turns out that they're not telling anyone a story. And I think that's because the very first, the Chronicles of Amber by Roger Zelazny, of which I was a big fan until I went back and read, and the sexism fairy just crapped all over them, are in first person. And I don't remember so much about the second. It's two series of five. And the first series, at the end, you actually find out this is literally him telling a certain person this story. And I read that at a sort of formative age. And so nowadays it bugs me. I mean, I have read 18 Dresden Files books, and he does first person with sort of fourth wall breaky stuff in it. And I'm confident we're never gonna, like, there's not an audience he's talking to. And that frustrates me a little bit. That being said, I don't know that there'll ever be one for my books either. But that is a thing that very much appeals to me and gives me a much more clear image of what I'm doing. I'm listening to somebody tell a story. And I even do this, like, in my role playing and stuff like that. I prefer to do it in first person. I prefer to both inhabit the character and have the other people sort of inhabit the character. So that one I have a clearer idea of, but I don't know really what makes it.
So how is this conversation ramping up to how you watch TV and movies? Because that's what I want to know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's all related somehow.
Well, of course, I've talked before. I have a problem nowadays of watching things, and all I'm doing is thinking about what I'm going to tell basically you about it. And that gets right in the way. So I'm trying to think. There have been a couple of things recently where I have either decided I'm not going to talk about this to people so I can just experience it, or I'm not going to talk about it because I'm really sorry I watched it and kind of ashamed, and I'm not going to bring it up like a thing I watched last night. I don't know. I mean, it definitely switches, because again, there are so many components to making film outside of storytelling. If I get really caught up in a story, I guess there is sort of this omniscient feel to it, because I feel like this is happening and I am watching. But there's no mechanism for me to be watching, so I must be, you know, the invisible eye or whatever that Whitman talked about, or I forget who talked about. One of the American existentialists got into the invisible eye. But a lot of other times I'll be like very focused on the things involved. Like the performance of this person is really good, and I think about it as the actor doing this performance, and they're really good, or this shot is really cool, or conversely, this shot is dumb as hell, or you know, like that was a terrible edit, or things like that. And some that I can be like, story was whatever, but it was really, and in fact, there are a lot of movies that I enjoy that are crap on pretty much every level except the performances were great. And I enjoy it, but I'm aware like the story's dumb or whatever. And so then I'm just, it's probably a version of other people watching a sporting event. I'm just appreciating the ability that is happening here. I'm just enjoying watching the feat of skill that they are doing. But yeah, I think when I'm really caught up in the story, I think I am. All of that's gone. These are really things that are happening, and I'm, I guess, watching through a magic window.
I don't think that ever happens to me. And, you know, people always say, because I'll talk about you sometimes while it's happening, I'll talk about what I'm experiencing. But even if I don't, it's afterwards. people say to me all the time, William, why don't you just enjoy it? Why don't you just shut off whatever's going on and just enjoy it? And besides the fact that I am enjoying it, this is how I do it, you know, this is how I enjoy this, and I am enjoying it. The other part, I don't even know how that I don't even know what you really mean by that. But last night I was thinking about it and I was thinking, oh, if I draw an analogy between what that friend told me about how they read, I guess I can kind of intellectually imagine what that would be like to just enjoy it, to not pay attention to any of the stuff that I usually pay attention to.
But to not understand it, that shouldn't be a problem here. Here's what it is. And you've encountered this story many times. It's a huge trope. I am a great wizard, and for weird plot-related reasons, I am bringing you this crystal ball, William. And through this crystal ball, you're not going to want to do it, because you're you. But for, I don't know, world-saving reasons, you're going to look into it and see things that are happening with people out in the world, and you're going to watch through this crystal ball. And
okay,
obviously there's a, wow, this is insane, this isn't real, like, this is magic, that's amazing aspect of it, but you got to get over that because it's actually just TV. But maybe the reason you don't do that is the other scenario in that is you're like, if, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my version of William with that, like, got to start, oh my God, I should not be watching this. Oh my God, I should not be watching this. I know they're in public somewhere, but I wasn't there. There's no reason for me to be watching this. This is such an invasion. I can't believe I'm doing this. And I could see it sucking if that's how you watched every TV show. And so maybe your brain is like, we have to keep away from this. Because if I get too involved, I will feel like I'm invading their privacy.
No, it's more of a, I'm just, I mean, part of it is habit. You know, this is just how I do it. Why should I do it any different way? I like doing it this way. But I think about,
and that is the most important thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But the more I
watch
TV and
movies the way you enjoy,
the more I think about how other people do it, it doesn't make me more interested in doing it that my, or, you know, figuring out a way to, you know, like, there's no curiosity in me to go, wow, I want to try that. I want to do it like that. I like the way I do it. I'm perfectly fine with that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with people doing it different. I'm just saying that I started out not realizing anyone did it differently, but then when I realized they did it differently, there wasn't anything about their way of doing it that made me think that I should do it that way.
Very much the same when you find out that half the people wipe their butt differently than you. Same thing. I don't think anyone has ever learned that and been like, maybe I should be doing it that way. I don't think that's but the distinction I do know in both the way you talk about the reading and the watching is you never leave yourself.
Mm-mm.
It is always you have to be an entity in the interaction because you are the one reading the words. You are the one interpreting what is being, it is being told to you. You are always a component of it, as opposed to, say, me, I can get caught up in a good enough story where I sort of forget I'm playing a part in the interaction. The story is happening.
And do you think that is a better experience or when a story is able to get placed, do you think that that says something positive about the story or something is?
I mean, it definitely does on a base level that it only happens when a story is really good or when a story pulls me in. I mean, that is a sign of quality that can happen, whereas other times it doesn't. Whether or not I think that is a better way to experience it than the way you experience it, a silly question. It's going to depend on the person.
I just meant
depend on the story.
Sure. I was just asking about your subjective feeling about it. Like, oh yeah, I really like when that happens, you know.
I do like when it happens sometimes. I mean, I also like a loss. I mean, I also do drugs to lose control. So that's a component. But also, so much of what I do with storytelling is in particular to put on emotions from a safe distance. I like to, you know, oh, I really feel for this person. I really like, and it's not as rough as going through it because I know it's not real. Yes, I understand this is going to be like, then Tony, why do you not watch all the really rough and bumpy stuff? I don't know. Apparently I can't detach quite enough that like Breaking Bad doesn't just make me feel like shit. I don't understand, but I do know that I seek out stories in general and music in general to let me experience emotions that I really don't want in here because it's traumatic or stressful or whatever. And so getting caught up in like that can be really good. Now, there are times when it's also not good, because there are times when I get caught up in a story that I find very frustrating or stressful. And sometimes I'm just like, this is not fun. I don't enjoy this because it is too close to making me feel things that I don't enjoy feeling. Often frustration. This just popped into my head, and I haven't followed up on it, which is really bad. I saw a YouTube video talking about some indie games that people thought they should do, and I didn't look at it, but I like moved the cursor on it, and so it was showing little clips from it and things. And I swear to fucking God, there was Batman and Spider-Man in there. So there might be a Batman Spider-Man game. Hatlings, go find out and tell me in the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com.
I find it interesting that you mentioned the whole drug thing, because I was thinking that myself. I was thinking about how there might be a relationship between my having no interest in losing myself in a story and my having no interest in losing myself in any kind of drug situation.
I didn't want to be too harsh up front, but I almost, when you explained it the last time, I almost said, well, that's because you have control issues. Because I think that's what we're talking about here.
And I realize that's how some people can see it, but I don't want
to always be where they are.
Oh, but I don't have that. I don't think I don't think I have the sense that I have control over anything or want control over anything, but that's very different than wanting to be out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's wanting to control, there's wanting to be out of control. And then there's just a person who doesn't want to be either of those things. Just wants to be a nice kind of right in the middle. They're present. They're aware. They know they can make decisions when decisions are demanded. They don't think they're in control of everything. They don't want to be in control of everything, but they don't want
to be out of control. I'm not talking about everything. I'm talking about the self. Control issues that I'm talking about are, I am in control of me at all times. I am planted within myself. And I, because I know how to run myself, and I certainly don't want anything that would trick me or even physically make me not be able to control myself. It is an extremely common thing for people who don't do drugs. They're like, not you, but like people who have tried it and are like, I don't like it, because they're like, I don't like that feeling of not being in control of myself.
I'm sure I wouldn't like that feeling either.
No. Well, and I think the sensation I'm talking about is a minor version of that. Because it's sort of allowing the story to take me places. It's me sort of, I mean, not consciously, but it's me saying, okay, I'm in this. And what I'm going to feel and what I'm going to think is sort of going to be in your hands.
I think,
and it's not on purpose, but I think you probably have safety mechanisms in place in your unconscious to be like, I don't want to do that. Whereas I'm like, fuck it, let's go.
Yeah, I think I do. But also I think there are some, I'm thinking of times where I'm taking in nonfiction stories. And I do feel like I'm far more willing in those instances to sort of, you know, get out of the way of my own comprehension of what's being said. I think one of the reasons I think truth is stranger than fiction, but maybe one of the reasons I think that is because I allow myself to appreciate some factual account or a documentary or a nonfiction book more than I allow myself to appreciate something that's fiction. when I know it's fiction, there's some kind of wall up. It's like, oh, this is fiction. So there's going to be a filter here to help me understand it and cope with it and everything else. But if I think it's factual or truthful, there's still a filter there so that I'll catch any kind of, so that I still have critical thinking going on, because usually it's a science or whatever, but I'm less guarded about whatever the content is, and I'm more susceptible to getting caught up in whatever the narrative is about how stars form, or how, you know, whatever the, or how this historical thing unfolded.
Yeah.
I mean, I can really get into that
stuff. You're a big advocate of truth. So if there's a part of you that thinks this is true, you know, you go all in. I don't hold a lot of distinction. And also, it's this day and age, especially when it's biographical or things like that, I don't fucking trust anyone.
Well, I think,
so if it's a true story, like, I come into it with the bias that they're full of shit. It's not a true story. And I just have to figure out which parts aren't.
Right, right. I think, though, that's interesting what you said, because sometimes fiction can hold a lot of truth, obviously. And I think that's one of the things more recently in my life I've been able to appreciate, are the profound truths that are in fiction, and how I can maybe open myself up more to those things than I'm...
You're welcome.
Than I...
I assume it was my book that did that. You're welcome.
I think it was Frankenstein that did that. I think when I read Frankenstein, because when I read Asimov and all that science fiction stuff, I think I still sort of read it as a thought experiment in nonfiction, right? I don't think it ever connected with me as a fictional thing. I think I always sort of absorbed all of that stuff, just like I would read nonfiction. This is just a thought experiment on the on history and things like that. And of course, Asimov, as we've already explained, since he writes in such a, you know, non-lyrical style, that really contributed to my thinking about it that way. But I think when I started reading like 19th century fiction, and in particular 19th century fiction, like Frankenstein, I started to see the value of the truth value of this type of writing. And I think I took a step closer to appreciating fiction in that way. But I mean,
the time period is really sort of the height of metaphor and symbolic language. If you read even just short stories out of like the Victorian era and stuff, it's like, this almost doesn't make sense until you put like a huge amount of symbolism on it. Like, you can't even read it textually. You have to read it subtextually, or else it's just bonkers.
And the themes are kind of mythic, right?
Yeah.
They very much, you know, that's why they call it, you know, I mean, I think that's, you know, part of what the term romantic means with these stories is they're, you know, I don't know, something about them just really, and the timing of my reading them really struck a chord. And I think I took a step closer to understanding, you know, what fiction can be for me and for other people and for me as a person creating it, and also experiencing it closer to how I think other people experience fiction versus nonfiction. But it's been a journey, because I mean, I've realized, you know, I didn't realize I was so weird about this when I was growing up, but I've come to understand that my sort of fiction focus when I was a kid.
People out there who are making edits of this video that I know you were, thank William for getting that perfect pause in there when he said, I didn't realize I was so weird. Like, I definitely plan to make use of that soundbite.
No, but I mean... It took many years for me to
stop
and realize.
There's stuff that you don't know is strange until you ask another person what they do, and it's not at all what you do.
Yeah, and it turns out I don't know anyone else like that. I have never met, and I don't think even in my, well, maybe in my family, but I don't even know that, who was so, you know, who was so focused on nonfiction stuff and was so kind of averse to fiction and didn't understand it. And everybody around me was reading it and reading it a lot differently than I was. I mean, it was, it's just really interesting to me how different my experience was than from really everybody else I've known. And it's kind of been an interesting journey to figure it out.
We have discussed before that I am largely someone who needs a reason not to do something, or I'm going to try doing it. And you're somebody who needs a reason to do it, or you're not going to try it.
Right.
Yep. I suddenly realized that potentially has way bigger and more nuanced ramifications than either of us realized. Like, because we all just thought in terms of like, oh, skydiving or doing drugs or whatever. But it also could be like literally just a thing in your brain where like some little voice in your brain was like, we could try reading it like this. And your brain was like, I don't see a reason why to. And so you never did.
Yeah, probably.
Like, or just in general, like, because I, in my thought process, and in fact, to a fault, and in fact, it might be a lot of why I'm in therapy, do a lot of versions of, you know, I approach this particular aspect of thought like this all the time, maybe just for shits and giggles, I'll try it different. And I mean, I think I'm an extreme case in that, because again, I'm so far in my own head, it's stupid. But I just like playing around in there and break shit and fix it and see what it does now. And I'm guessing you have been very meticulous about maintaining the construction in your brain.
Well, I mean, I think
I don't mean to imply narrow-mindedness or anything. I'm not talking about the furnishings. I'm talking about the innate structure of the building.
Yeah, I'm all for trying new things, but not just for the sake of it being new, because it might, you know, serve some larger purpose. I mean, that's another thing you and I have talked about, is a sense of mission that I seem to have that you don't seem to have.
No.
And that sense of mission contextualizes everything. The reason I need a reason to do something is because I have a broader project that I can't afford to not attend to. So if I don't have a reason to do it in that broader context, that's a waste of my time. I could be doing something else that serves the broader mission.
Yeah. Whereas I don't got a lot going on, like spiritually, I don't got a lot going on. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. I got time.
Anyway, you probably have a lot to talk about with your week, and I haven't even asked you yet.
I absolutely do. We're not going to get to any questions.
Okay.
It's terrible.
Sorry, everybody.
But first, a little side story.
Oh, okay.
Just because I'm proud. I just found it. So this that I'm wearing, I call it a caftan. It's legit a nightshirt. We purchased it from a store. It's a nightshirt. But I call it a caftan, and when I cannot be fucking bothered, I will wear it out in public.
Okay.
And I did that today. I had to go. I had forgotten to pick up some prescriptions, and so I went before noon, because that's when it gets really busy at the pharmacy. And I got them. And on the way back, I'm like, I'm going to get a drink, maybe a snack for lunch from the come and go. And so I go over there. And for reasons, I actually decided I was going to pay in cash. And part of it is pretty much the only time I keep a small amount of cash in my wallet at all times for those rare circumstances where you need cash. But in general, it just lives there. We never use cash, except we go to the farmer's market every Saturday. And due to some misplacing of where the bills were, we had made a lot of purchases that had gotten changed, and I had just a ton of singles. And so I'm like, I'm going to use some of these. And so I go up and I get my stuff and I'm going to thing, and there are two cashiers because there are multiple people. And I go to the cashier when it's my time, and just then the other one's free. So for some reason, the cashier who's not on my register is like, how are you doing today? And I'm like, fine, how are you doing? And I just want to say it to paint a word picture, not because it's at all related. This was a young man, I would say probably over 18, probably not much, very blonde, very white, very camp. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Very camp vibe in general.
Okay.
And the other guy, very not. The other guy talked in that way that it sounded like he was having to put efforts to get words out. Not like dumb, but just like just inherently non-social. But so he's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. And I'm pulling out the thing because I finally have a rewards card because I'm like, I buy enough crap there. It's worth it. So I'm doing that. And then the guy who's actually my cashier says, so is that a dress or a shirt?
Really?
Yes. Wow. And I'm psyched because this almost never happens. In general, I keep expecting people to comment more that I walk around in essentially dresses and no one ever does. And I say, yeah, it's, I mean, I call it a caftan. It's technically a nightshirt. I said, my wife makes me better ones, but I couldn't be bothered today. I don't have a job anymore, so I've just stopped wearing pants. And then I open up the wallet to get out of the thing, and there are more singles than I even realized. And I said, I don't know where I got all these singles from. I must be stripping in my sleep.
That's a good one. I like that.
And two things happened. One, my cashier said, your wife just gives you a lot of singles. And a lot of shit went through my head then. I'm just like, does he picture? I mean, I made the leap. I don't have a job. Therefore, she's earning the money.
Well, you asked, also like, said you stripped in your sleep. So
does he think she just like hands me cash period? Like, how does, and then I was like,
I think he meant happen while you're stripping, people, who's going to be giving you the singles other than your wife?
You know, that one didn't occur to me. But fortunately, because of this tangle that would have had me stuck, I mean, I kind of just went like, I don't know. But meanwhile, the other kid, the blonde one, the camp one, lost his ever-loving mind. He thought this was the funniest thing ever. He's like, I am absolutely going to steal that. And I walked out of there thinking that was one of the most interesting retail exchanges I've had in a long time. And it put me in a very good mood.
I'd have been laughing if I was like standing behind you waiting for you to get done. I would have been thought the whole thing was hilarious.
And I can't even say it was off the cuff because the truth is in high school, I worked in a restaurant as a busser. And so I mostly got tips out of the tips of the wait staff. So I had a lot of singles. And I learned back then, people who know if you go around and pay a lot with singles, you are either waiting tables or stripping. Those are the two professions where you get a ton of singles. And so I have used that information to comedic effect many times in my life. Although this wasn't the first time I used this one, and I did like it. Anyway, I need to talk about three movies I saw this week.
Jeez Louise, three movies.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. One of them doesn't really count as a movie, but I just want to put this out here for the public. On YouTube, there is now, as of maybe a couple weeks ago, I don't know, whatever, there is a full length, like feature length comedy performance by Kyle Kinane called, I believe, Trampoline in a Ditch. And it is a whole like hour and a half performance that he did at actually a comedy club in Madison that we've been to and seen Kyle Kinane there. But he basically recorded an album or whatever. And for reasons I don't know, the production company or whatever put it on YouTube for free. And we love Kyle. We've seen him multiple times live. He never disappoints. He always just cracks us up. Whatever. I've had some concerts I like better than others, but I'm always laughing my ass off. So I highly recommend go check that out. Kyle Kinane and Trampoline in a Ditch. It's just free on YouTube. Watch it. Also, I was very excited because earlier this week I learned that something that had been in theaters not too terribly long ago that I expected would be a long time before I could really get my hands on to where I could like rent it or whatever, because I really wanted to see it, but I wasn't going to be there, was actually coming to Hulu just normal this week. And I told Trish about it. And I said, you don't have to come on this journey with me, but I'm very excited. And date night is the night after this shows up. And I told her, and she's like, I don't think I will. And I said, that is fine. I will do it. And so I did it yesterday when I sat down with my lunch. I had done most of my chores in the morning. I'm like, I have time. So I got to watch the Bob's Burgers movie.
Oh, okay.
And I was very happy.
Good.
You want to know how it was?
No. But, I mean, you're going to tell me anyway, so.
Well, I have to tell you via analogy.
Okay.
So, have you ever seen the Simpsons movie?
I did see the Simpsons movie.
All right. So, you know the Simpsons TV show?
I do know the Simpsons TV show.
You know the Simpsons movie?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the Bob's Burgers TV show?
I mean... Not, I mean, I haven't. If you're asking if I've watched it, no,
you know of it.
I know of it,
yes.
I'm not interested in watching it.
This is the Bob's Burgers movie. Like, the relationship between the Simpsons TV show and the Simpsons movie is identical to the relationship between the Bob's Burgers movie or the Bob's Burgers TV show and the movie. It's basically a somewhat more involved feature length episode of Bob's Burgers,
except people get to swear and maybe they'll show the cartoon. Cartoon nudity?
No, but they don't.
Oh.
That surprised me. We deal with some fairly heavy themes compared to the TV show, but I was surprised because it was rated PG-13. I was a little surprised. But like, yeah, the Simpsons movie, I'm like, I like the Simpsons movie. I'm not going to say I liked it better or worse than the show. There's definitely episodes of the show I like better and episodes of the show I like worse. It was different, but it was still pretty much just a long episode of Simpsons. And this was the same thing. And it wasn't my favorite episode of Bob's Burgers, but it was a good episode of Bob's Burgers. And I haven't had new Bob's Burgers in a while. It had all the things you like about Bob's Burgers. It's great. And Bob's Burgers is becoming, I mean, I've seen them all now, but it's also replacing The Simpsons in my head and a lot because I really... think it has a lot to say in a way that The Simpsons hasn't for a while. I'll still watch The Simpsons. I'll still sometimes enjoy it, but Bob's Burgers really speaks to me, like on a personal level, not just an entertaining level, but it's also entertaining. Bob's Burgers is also a very musical show. There's often songs, not always, but often songs. And so, of course, there were several songs in the movie. I didn't quite care for them, and I'm not entirely sure why. They were definitely well made. Something I think about the production vibe, I don't know. The songs on the TV show feel like they have more heart to them. I'm not sure, but I enjoyed that. But none of that matters. None of this is what we're here to talk about.
Okay.
We are here. And I apologize because this is how we're not going to get any questions in, but it has to happen because this weekend, because it was available for rent for like $6. Actually, it was on sale to purchase for 10. A little sorry, maybe we didn't do that. We just rented. We saw
Do you want a drum roll or something? I mean,
no, I'm trying to remember the title. I believe it is The Unbearable Weight of Immense Talent. Oh, it's the Nick Cage movie. We saw the Nick Cage movie.
Yeah.
The Nick Cage movie. Cage. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
And
what?
What did you think of it?
All right. To date, I don't believe I have ever used this term that many film critics will use on occasion, but I'm using it now. A perfect movie. Hmm. Now, I need to make sure we all understand what I mean here. And also, Trish didn't agree. But I do not mean it is the best movie ever. I do not mean it is my favorite movie ever. I mean that for what it is, and it is quite a specific thing, I cannot imagine how they would do it, that kind of movie better. It was done top notch. It is such an incredible satire of Nicolas Cage while also being a celebration of Nicolas Cage. It is wholly fictional. I am 100% sure. I mean, some of it is obviously, but I'm pretty sure the entire thing is fictional, but all of it, nothing happened in the movie that was wilder than things that I know actually happened with Nick Cage. It is a movie that you could not do about any other real life actor. And if you made it about a fictional actor, it could be good, but it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't pack the Nicolas Cage-ness. Like, batshit things happen in this movie that I'm like, yeah, but it's Nicolas Cage. That actually is how that would go down. And the movie is also incredibly meta because there is sort of a through line about the relationship of two characters, one of whom is Nicolas Cage, who are also working on the creation of a screenplay together. And that screenplay is sort of mimicking the relationship. And there's a lot of discussion about the screenplay that is very clearly discussion about their relationship and the movie that they're in that they don't know they're in. Pedro Pascal is amazing. He and Nicolas Cage, who are the two main characters, have unbelievable chemistry. It is a tremendous, great sort of buddy comedy. And then it also sort of becomes sort of an action comedy with a little bit of family drama. And it's just, if you have an opinion on Nicolas Cage, good, bad, otherwise, see it. The only reason not to see it is if you're like, genuinely, I do not know or care about Nicolas Cage at all. Then why would you? Because it's a movie about Nicolas Cage. I'll tell you that right now. But it's like, it walks that amazing line where if it was any more satirical, he probably wouldn't have wanted to do it. And if it was any less satirical, there wouldn't have been a point.
It's like a roast, it sounds like.
Yeah, but also, but yeah, I think it is, because a roast, you mock, but you're also like really in. The whole point is that you love the person. I mean, if you're doing it right, if it's not something where just Comedy Central hired you and you've never met this person, but like a proper roast, it's that kind of vibe. And he's super into it. And actually, I will spoil nothing, but there is a very particular thing that happens in the movie that I found out was his idea on set. Like, no one else thought of it. And he was like, hey, it's going to be wild if we do this. And they did it. And it, again, it's like, oh my God, that's so, of course he did. Of course. like this makes me feel better about him as a person, because he could not have done this movie without getting how he is.
Yeah.
Like, Nicolas Cage is clearly in on the joke of Nicolas Cage.
You know, I think Pedro Pascal, I think one of his superpowers is having chemistry with everybody. I mean,
I am very quickly falling absolutely in love with Pedro Pascal.
Because, I mean, you know, he has chemistry with a freaking puppet. My God, he's just so good.
He's, you know, he's objectively the best thing about the second Wonder Woman movie.
That's what I think too.
And to this day, one of my friends, if any in our friend group ever say something is good and then pause at the end, my friend jumps in and says, but it could be better. And we all laugh every time. Don't get me wrong, within the story of that horrible movie, his character made no sense, but he was far and away the best and most entertaining thing about that movie.
The only thing I
hate is he does do a fair number of projects that I'm like, oh, that's too fucking dark for me, because like I think he kind of made his bones in Narcos, which I'm never fucking gonna see, and there's some sci-fi movie that Netflix I think has that looks good, but it's clear that like he's an absolute piece of shit in it. And I'm like, I don't think I want to see that either. which is too bad because, yeah, I am just falling in love with him. He is unbelievable.
Really
and
good.
One of the few people out there I think can pull off a mustache, and that's a rarity these days. I am not a fan
you keep
of mustache
that.
With no beard, but he can do it. He can do it. And he's phenomenal. And I thought more people were playing themselves. Everyone besides Nicolas Cage in this movie is playing a fictional character. Neil Patrick Harris features prominently in the trailer, and I thought he was just playing himself. No, he is Nicolas Cage's agent. And he absolutely embodies what you would expect Nicolas Cage's agent to be like.
Yeah.
it's if you heard about this movie and you were at all interested or hopeful, it's exactly the movie you want it to be. It is and to a degree that like you probably you'll see it and be like, I didn't even know I wanted it that way, but I do. Like, it is a perfect movie of the movie it is. I do not know how they could do it better. Trish is not quite, she enjoyed it, but she's not quite as gung-ho, but I'm just like, I cannot find a flaw in this film given what it was trying to be.
I don't think I've seen every Nicolas Cage movie, but I've seen a lot of them. I mean, and he is a draw. I like him. Nicolas Cage is in this. I'll go see it or whatever.
And this goes to the well, because again, I don't think the spoiler, because it's in the trailers. Pedro Pascal's character is a super fan of Nicolas Cage.
Oh.
And so we refer to a lot of things, and I haven't seen every movie because I haven't seen some of the big ones. I haven't seen The Rock. I have seen Con Air, but not in a real long time. But like they reference Guarding Tess, which I haven't seen. They reference Mandy, which I haven't seen, although I do want to.
Okay, and Mandy, I haven't seen.
Nothing did they throw at me that I didn't know what they were getting at.
Yeah.
Like they didn't throw a movie at me that I didn't know, or a movie that I'm like, I've heard it, but I don't know what it's about, so I don't get what they're saying. Like, I knew that.
Ghost Rider, one of the best.
They don't bring up Ghost Rider, and they don't bring up Leaving Las Vegas, which I found interesting, but it is something of a tonal shift. It's still a performance that only Nicolas Cage could have done, but it's very different from what you think of as a Nicolas Cage performance.
Agreed. I'm pretty sure I saw that.
I saw it years ago. I mean, yeah. And I mean, I don't even think I've seen Raising Arizona. But again, I'm familiar enough that like, and I don't, they didn't reference it originally strictly, but like that's what I think of as when I think of Nicolas Cage as a comedian, it's Raising Arizona. When I think of him as an action hero, then it's, you know, everything else. Or as a drunk, it's Leaving Las Vegas.
Face Off. Did they mention Face Off? They had to mention.
Oh, of course they mentioned Face Off. That's another, I knew there was two big ones. It was The Rock and Face Off. I've never seen.
What?
I've really had the urge to see Face Off, and I haven't gotten around to it. But now it's a for it's so bad it's good, because I'm just like, I know too much about it, and I'm like, it's ridiculous, completely outside of the bit where you can trade faces. Like outside of that, the movie makes no sense. But. Because it's an action movie, you know, out of the
but he's very Nick Cage in it. He's very
in both roles, because he has to play two roles in that movie.
I don't think I've seen Raising Arizona either. My family has, and they love it. They're constantly quoting it and stuff, but I don't, and I think I've seen parts of it, but I don't think I've seen the whole thing for some
I've definitely time. Seen parts, but yeah, and Moonstruck, that
he's good at that.
The very opening of this movie is shots from Nick Cage movies, and then you pan out and it's two teenage stoners watching Nick Cage movies, and they start talking about Nicolas Cage as an actor, and then the plot rushes in. this isn't standalone, it has to do with the plot, but it's just, it's one of those, like, love him or hate him, because I would not say, I don't know that I'd call myself a Nicolas Cage fan. Nicolas Cage is not, Nicolas Cage is unique. And I feel like that's a very rare thing to say for movie stars. Like, there are some that are better than others, but like, I know a whole lot of actors that I'm like, that's just a slightly different Tom Cruise.
I know, but like, to me, he's in the same category as like Christopher Walken, you know, it's like.
There are similarities, but like, well, and there are similarities in that everybody can do an impression of either of them.
I know, but I'm just saying having certain idiosyncrasies that are super unique, that go from role to role to role.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of, there's a few actors like that.
Well, you know my theory of if you can't find X, you get X, or you get Y.
Oh, the low rent.
Yeah, the ladder of this is a poor man's this. This is a poor man's this. Right. And like, there's a big one that involves F. Murray Abraham, Malcolm McDowell, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen that switches over years depending on how their careers go. And actually, there's another guy whose name I haven't figured out who is the low rent version of F. Murray Abraham, and I can't remember, but he was a recurring one on Star. Anyway, and Walken will fit those. Walken can fit anywhere, and Nick Cage can be shoved into things. But if you're like, I need a Nicolas Cage performance. First of all, obviously, you can get Nick Cage. I mean, maybe that's the factor too. And the same with Christopher Walken. You can get Christopher Walken.
Yep.
Like, they don't turn shit down.
Not really.
But
and they're always, if
for
good
some
at
reason they couldn't, I don't know who you'd replace them with. If either you wanted Tom Cruise and you couldn't get him, I know people you could stick in there. If you wanted Ben Affleck, if you wanted Jude Law, if you wanted Robert Downey Jr., I know who you could get for those. And I mean, in terms of actresses, it's not even a fun game with actresses because nobody writes them parts that are distinct enough.
Yeah, I know.
So most big Hollywood actresses are interchangeable because their parts, even when they're the leads, are so generic.
Yep.
That, because I'm like, this isn't fair. I should talk about actresses. And I'm like, no, they're fucked. The only time is indie things. And in indie things, it usually is that actress, because we had that actress in mind and it was written for her. But yeah, with actors, there's usually, especially with leading men, there's a set, you know, Gerard Butler comes in there or whatever. Gerard Butler might be the closest you can get if you wanted Nick Cage. Well, it depends. It depends on the Nick Cage you want. It kind of splits. And on one side is Gerard Butler and on one side is Vin Diesel. And both of them are a severe disappointment. If you wanted, maybe Vin that's Diesel. It. Maybe Nick Cage is who you get when you combine Gerard Butler and Vin Diesel. And I already feel bad saying it. I want to apologize to Mr. Cage. I don't feel like that was appropriate. I'm sorry. Carl Urban would probably try real hard. But Nick Cage is Nick Cage. Well, it's the same thing. If you did a fucking movie like this about Christopher Walken, I would be all over that.
It'd be good too.
Although I think in that one, he would have to write and direct it himself. Like, I don't, but to be fair, I don't know who could have done this, and they nailed it. They fucking nailed it. I'm telling you, it's the movie you want it to be. So if you had any interest in this movie, anyone, see it, because it is that movie that you're hoping for. It's so that movie. And I had a blast. And I was reeled in from jump. And it's a dumb story because it's supposed to be. I mean, it's action comedy. Of course, it's a dumb story. But it's exactly what you want it to be, and it is pitch perfect. It is, the tone is there. I'm like, I know this is Nick Cage acting, but if somehow you told me it wasn't, I would still believe. Like, it might as well. Like, it's so. It's not over the top. Of what, I mean, that's a weird thing to say. It's not over the top of what it should be. It's all right within the strike zone of Nick Cage. Just
the strike perfectly. Zone, man.
I do those on purpose now, just to fuck with you. Before every podcast, I learn one more baseball term. It's really the designated hitter of movies. It's such an RBI.
That's good.
But yeah, and he and Pedro Pascal, and I wouldn't have necessarily guessed that. I think you might be onto something. I think his ability to gel with an acting partner is just phenomenal, because it's just, oh my god, there's so many things I want to talk about, and I will not spoil any of this. It is an experience to be had, and you should not know any more than what the trailer gives you, which I think the trailer just gives you the vibe. But to the degree that, as Hollywood is wont to do, the trailer has certain jokes that, like, then you won't get them for the first time in the movie. They do it well enough that I still thought it was funny. Like, it's so yeah. So check that out. I do apologize. No questions this week. But that's because William came with a very fruitful idea. This will happen every once in a while. We're not just receivers here. We have ideas, and sometimes we put them out here. I don't know if you've noticed. And William had a good one, and we had to talk about it. And you should say thank you.
Well, no, what you should do is give your own thoughts in the blog, because
absolutely, absolutely, I'm
very interested in what everybody thinks about this topic.
Sorry, I was channeling the old movie Mi Familia and seeing Jimmy Smith saying, yeah, so maybe somebody should thank us. Which, that apparently was my Chicano accent, so apologies to, I mean, just the whole world. That was terrible.
The whole world. That was a crime against humanity, for sure.
Racist, because I feel like it wasn't formed enough to have that kind of position. Yeah. It was barely human. It sounded like I recently had some work done on my face, like cosmetic surgery, and it had healed. So apologize, but Mi Familia, a hell of a movie. And there's a great bit in it where they're like, maybe somebody should thank us. And nobody's thanking them. But anyway, yeah, go to the blog, magictalkinghat.com. Talk about this. Also, if you have these ideas, I think more of you need to send in shower thoughts. I have great shower thoughts. I am king of shower thoughts. I have so many of them. And I have ones, and every once in a while, I'm like, that would make a really good email. Somebody should email that to the hat. Because, you know, we don't have standards. We're going to go for it. I mean, also, in the meantime, you know, buy my book. You still got a couple weeks here where it is free. So if the obstacle was $3, it's not an obstacle anymore. Go to Smashwords. Look for Odd Wings, ODDWINGS, and buy it and read it and tweet at me about how much you're enjoying it or whatever. And then maybe you'll beat out Craig. He's only a third of the way through. Maybe you talk to me when you're half through. Who knows? And go to azathetheater.com and check out William's stuff too. I mean, it's fine. Whatever. He's got more stuff than I do. So if you're into quantity. You know, do that. Also, keep listening. It's going to get weird. I mean, it won't get weird for you every Thursday. We're good about that. For recording purposes, it's going to get weird for a few weeks. But we're on it. We've worked it out. We've got our deal. So we are good. So keep listening. And that's it. Just keep listening. It's fine. You don't have to do anything else.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.